the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting that was news to you, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for Friday, March 12th of the year of our Lord, 2021. This is hour two of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, the blueprint for liberty, the Constitution for the United States of America, is indeed our guide. Section balances put in place by the founders, brilliant. One of the great peaceful restorative solutions we have at our fingertips. We reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live. The good doctor just walked in. Welcome, Dr. Scott Bradley.
Well, thank you very much, and I hope everyone is having a gorgeous day. We've got blue skies. It's low 20s, but I have to give you that weather report, so if you're away in Florida someplace or, you know, you have some warm and comfortable environment, you can kind of congratulate yourself for being wise enough to be there.
Yes, but you know what I like about the cold is usually the ne'er-do-wells don't come hunt you down when they have to go through a bunch of Rocky Mountains and they got to go up in the cold and they're going to go bug somebody else, aren't they, Doctor?
Well, there's a lot of truth to that. And here's the other thing that a lot of people don't understand. If you get cold, put more clothes on. I mean, sometimes if it's really, really hot, there's almost nothing you can do. Let's say your air conditioning is not working. It's just sweltering. I mean, in the cold, you just dress for it, you know, and you deal with it. And that's kind of what we in the cold country have done all our lives. But to some people, just the thought that something might be cold is chilling to their ideas. Let's put it that way.
Well, I wish we could be chilling to the ideas of socialism and communism, but they seem to be live and well and flourishing in America to our peril. I'll say that, ladies and gentlemen. But there's a lot going on. Me and Dr. Scott Bradley need to talk about. Last hour, we talked a little bit about this with Lowell Nelson, but I want to dig into it in much more detail with a good doctor. Headline, Gunning for You. It starts, Dr. Bradley. You know what? The Democrats are kicking off their campaign against the Second Amendment, and in a flurry of attacks against your right of God-given inalienable self-defense, the U.S. House is doubling down with two bills to steal your rights, but they haven't even begun the strikes that Joe Biden will lead over the next couple of years. It might be Joe. It might be Kamala. Who knows? It might be in tandem. It might be an invisible hand as Joe's not able to think for himself. I don't know, but I'm telling you right now, they're going for broke, aren't they, sir?
Well, indeed they are. In fact, yesterday the House passed two anti-gun bills. Both of them have to do with, your background checks. One of them requires background checks on all transactions. If you're not a licensed dealer, and we could go into a lot of the nuances of that, but if you're not a licensed dealer, you got to take it through a licensed dealer to pass a handgun on, with the exception of basically within a relative. You know, you could give your son a shotgun for his birthday or something, and if you're at the shooting range and somebody wants to try out your rifle, you could do that and have it handed back to you. But the fact of the matter is that they're looking for having all, and they claim that this will save thousands of lives. And the other one that also passed extended the 3-day background check deadline to 10 days. And so, again, these are incremental things. The one hope that is still in our hearts, I guess, with this, with the buffoons that we have attempting to govern at this time, like the Paris Commune that we talk about so much in the 1871 period with the communists in Paris. At any rate, the hope that we have is that this 60-vote cloture thing will prevent them from being voted on and approved in the Senate. Schumer has promised that they will both come to the floor of the Senate, and they will have a hearing. And of course, basically, it's not a complete bifurcation in the House, but by and large, the Republicans voted against these things, and the Democrats voted for them. But if the Republicans hold fast in the Senate and don't start jumping ship, but there has been quite a number, a growing number, you know, the Murkowskis and the Collins and the Romneys of the world that have, lent their voice to the agenda of the Democrats. At any rate, if they don't get the 60-vote culture, it will not be voted on. Now, there's a moving in that direction that has been, it started really pretty strongly during the Obama years. Trump continued it in some issues, and I would suspect that there's going to be trickery and chicanery to try and get rid of that culture thing, which is a real protection against democracy and the quote-unquote majority rule that violates direct principles. So anyway, that's kind of where we are with those, and yes, indeed, they did pass them yesterday. So the march is on.
The march is on, ladies and gentlemen. The issues are clear. Now, it's sad that the House passed them, and it's sad that it's turned into such partisan politics, etc. The senators don't really have the stopping power they had hoped to have. The Democrats might push for just a majority. They might dispense with some of their rules to get it passed. They might use all kinds of other unique rules and guidelines that they can on the fly make up and change, etc. That may be a problem, but we need to fight this in the Senate right now while we have a chance. And I mentioned last hour to Lowell, and I'll mention it again. I think that there's a lot of influence that people can have. We the people, but senators particularly, to reach across the aisle, and a lot of Democrats believe in God-given constitutional rights too. Not all of them. Some of them are just wholesale communists. But there are Democrats that we can reach out across the aisle and work with. It's the swamp against us. It's not the Democrats versus the Republicans. I know it seems so partisan like that, but we can break a lot of that partisanship with relationships, so with reaching across the aisle and appealing to some people's better senses. And the way I know this is back in the budget days of discussions, I know we've just jettisoned all budget common sense now, but back in the budgetary days, there were a lot of Democrats that were very conservative, budgetarily speaking. And they said, you know what, we're like the yellow dog Democrats or whatever. We don't want to spend into oblivion like many of the Republicans do. And they created kind of they forged some alliances across those Republican-Democratic lines that made a difference. We can do this again on gun control as well. That's one line of defense, Doctor.
You know, your statement about the old and the new Democrat Party is very accurate. I'll give you an example of something that there's worlds of difference. Back in the 1960s, the Democrat Party was, you know, kind of known as the blue-collar party, the people that were looking out for the union jobs and the American worker and all that kind of stuff. And the party was dead set against illegal immigration. I mean, it was almost... blindingly so, in comparison to what even the most ardent Trump supporter is today. There was acts of violence that happened against illegal immigrants, and they were led by people that were very much aligned with the Democrat Party. And over the few recent years, there has been a move to that because demographically, I think they've pretty well proven statistically that those that become, you know, first-time voters that have come to the country illegally and then become, citizens, and even those that aren't citizens now are voting. But the fact of the matter is they're almost a sure thing vote for the Democrat side. And, there's different numbers out there. A lot of the official numbers say that there's like 11 or 12 million illegals in the country today. I do not believe that for a nanosecond. I think it's more like three times that amount, but even a middle ground of 20 some odd million voters that would be getting, you know, that come into the country that are illegal and then they get their citizenship based upon the track that the Democrats currently are looking for, you know, giving not only amnesty but citizenship to those 20 something million. That's a middle ground of the estimates. That would provide far greater margin of success on the biggest disparity between presidential candidates that's ever happened. I mean, I think that I think I read the other day that there was like the biggest disparity was 17 million votes between the winner and the loser in a given election. But if you get 22, 25, whatever million the number is, the Republicans are never going to win again. And the Democrat Party has absolutely put their weight behind this. So, yeah, their positions do shift. And whether it's a Second Amendment issue, the right to keep and bear arms, whether it's an immigration issue, whether it's a religion issue, but there's a flat-out, complete abandonment of everything based upon U.S. principle that was established in the origin of this nation. And there's bills out there right now to get rid of religious liberty. There's gender bender bills. There's things that nobody could have possibly conceived of, you know, when I was young. I mean, it's just complete abandonment of all sanity.
Yeah, even when I was young, just a short generation ago, you're right, it's rain on that. The other line of self-defense I have is, you know what, we've got jurisdictional boundaries, okay? And that's horizontal and vertical, these checks and balances that matter. The states have their own constitutions that defend the right to keep and bear arms as well. And even if the federal goes off rails, the states can nullify now and say, we're not going to allow you to violate our state constitutions. We'll talk about that with Dr. Scott Bradley in a second. His website, freedomsrisingsun.com. You are listening to the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads, a divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman, Dr. Scott Bradley in the house. FreedomsRisingSun.com is website. That's FreedomsRisingSun.com. Incredibly weekly webinars and more. Q&A's on the Constitution. His incredible curriculum, To Preserve the Nation. It's a collegiate curriculum for homeschoolers and anybody who wants to understand the Constitution. A DVD stand-up lectures, a book, a work guide, and et cetera, to help you get a handle on it. FreedomsRisingSun.com for that. The live webinars and over 1,000 videos, ladies and gentlemen, helping you understand the sacred cause to which we're engaged. That is the cause of liberty. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live. Dr. Scott Bradley is riding shotgun on the show today. He'll be with me Fridays and Mondays, second hour, ladies and gentlemen. I'm on the road. Thanks for your patience with me, by the way. And all kind of things are happening. But I want to highlight, really, a right to keep and bear arms is really, really important. And the Democrats are going hardcore against it. Right before the pause, we talked about these separation of powers and how they're obliterating it on the federal level. But you know what? One of our great ways to stop that is to build bridges and realize, appeal to our friends and people who we know, even if we disagree, Republican, Democrat, whatever else, let's stand together on something. And I think relationships can make that difference on the federal level. But you know what? We got another horizontal check and balance, which is important to understand as well. You have vertical and horizontal checks and balances in America. The states can stand up and nullify now and say, you know what? I appreciate that you guys just legislated guns out of existence in the 10-mile square called Washington, D.C. But you know what? That doesn't apply to us out here in the states. We have our own constitution. We have our own legislative bodies. And you know what? They have power within the states as dual sovereigns. They have their own jurisdictional reality. And we're not letting you do this in our state. And we're going to stand on not letting you violate, anybody violate, for that matter, our state constitutions. Doctor, let's start there.
Well, indeed, and we do need to spend more time on nullification because truly it is it has been slandered and betrayed, and there's been an absolute effort to subvert that sound constitutional principle. But let me just mention, you talk about the right to keep and bear arms. 44 states have included in their constitution the recognition of the right to keep and bear arms. 31 of those states explicitly recognize that right as a individual right. And they often mention it as a self-defense. There's a reason. And 6 states, by the way, don't explicitly recognize the right to keep and bear arms in their constitution. But 44 is they've got them written in. And so there's a sound foundation, and this issue needs to be protected at the state level. Now, last night in my webinar that we do every Thursday evening, that came up as one of the questions about nullification. Can the states, you know, interpose, if you will, when the general government gets out of whack? And I spent some time on that. I haven't looked at the length of that response, but if you go to freedomsrisingsun.com, there's a video posted now that answers that question that someone brought up during the webinar. But the fact of the matter is, this sound principle was very, very amazingly expressed and explained by both Madison and Jefferson, you know, the father of the Constitution and the principal author of the Declaration. And it's besmirched as something that's racist. And we could address that at length. And the reality of it is that nullification was used most often, probably 100 times more often, to subvert and deflect slavery than any other subject. I mean, nullification during the pre-Civil War era was very much used to protect against that bane, slavery. And so it is something that was understood. Many try to promote the idea that nullification was, you know, basically overthrown by the Civil War. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Both Jefferson and Madison felt that nullification was an act of love for the country that they loved. And they said it was the means by which those that love the principles upon which this nation was established can prevent both rebellion and secession. And what happens is if the general government keeps its actions within the proper bounds, then we all stay together and everybody's happy and we're a nation. But if they don't, there has to be another interposition there, and nullification is one of them. By the way, it was clearly expressed, and people need to understand this, because there's many that say, Madison was against nullification. And in fact, Madison was against nullification when it was improperly applied. And I'll give you an example of what they said was proper and improper. If this was their rule, if a power was delegated to the general government through the United States Constitution, so it is a delegated power, and we could use the abominable tariffs, for example, that came in the 1820s, the national general government did have and does have the power to impose tariffs. But what happened was that the general government began to overstep anything that was just and reasonable in that. And so South Carolina sought to nullify it. Well, Madison spoke out against that because it was a delegated power to the general government, and it had to be corrected in the ballot box. If the general government has the power, you can't nullify. That's the point. If the general government does not
have the
power...
Hold on, let me just jump in here really quick, Doctor, to kind of make this point. The federal government has tremendous power, but very narrowly defined. And in the Constitution, and then it articulates specifically what powers they have. So they're enumerated, but defined and limited. And anything outside of the scope, they don't have. But there's also a check and balance on when they have that authority. There's a line where when they abuse that authority, they can be reined in as well. And you're mentioning that the people at the ballot box can rein that in. These are important things to understand. They're narrow scope. Yes, they have tremendous power, but they don't have authority to unlimitedly abuse that power either.
That is correct. And so those that say that James Madison was against nullification are ignorant, deceived, or deceivers. I mean, they can only be one of three. So Madison did speak against it when it was improperly applied. But if the general government oversteps and begins to usurp power, undelegated power, and apply it, at that point, nullification becomes the appropriate solution. And so what we have, and it's a very clear cut situation in the Second Amendment, for example, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Okay? And of course, the Tenth Amendment says if we didn't delegate to the general government a level of power, it does not have it. End of discussion. And it says in the Ninth Amendment that even if we didn't mention a right that the people have, they still retain it. So there are instances where the general government has a specific authority. Like, for example, and we could talk about this in the 42nd Federalist paper, but immigration. That had to be held by the general government, okay? And we can explain why that was important and why this immigration thing needs to be something that the general government is involved in. But if states are invaded,
the second reason is that the federal government is designed to deal with foreign affairs as the states are to do with local affairs, right?
That's right. But states do have a power to engage in war if invaded, and it doesn't admit delay, okay? And that happened in 1916, by the way, when Pancho Villa and his gang came across the U.S. border from Mexico and were rampaging around, and the people in town says, the heck you say? And they had a pitched gun battle. I mean, this was something that the local people could respond to. So... anyway, the point of the matter being that the general government has specific delegated authorities, and all others that are rightfully held are held by the states. Now, let me just clarify something real quick before the break. Some Tenth Amendment people claim that the states can do anything they want because the Tenth Amendment says, you know, everything else is held by the states and the people. Well, that's not true. The baseline premise of proper government is outlined in the Declaration of Independence, where it says, you know, we have God-given rights, it outlines a few, and then it says it's the purpose of government to secure those rights. So it doesn't say it's the purpose of the general government or the state government or the county government or the municipal government. No, it says the purpose of government is to secure those God-given rights. So if a state, under the guise of the Tenth Amendment, begins to do things which are improper, such as violate the Second Amendment or to begin implementing redistribution of wealth through socialism and so on and so forth, which steals from one and gives to another, that violates the baseline premise of what proper government is noted as in the Declaration, to secure God-given rights.
And the proper role of government, ladies and gentlemen, also acknowledges God-given rights, and government is only there to protect those God-given rights. And if they do anything else, they run criminal. We'll talk about that with a good doctor, Scott Bradley, freedomsrisingsun.com in seconds.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Yeah.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
President Biden announced in an address to the nation Thursday that he is directing states, tribes, and territories to ensure everyone is eligible for COVID-19 vaccination by May 1st. Thanks to President Trump's Operation Warp Speed and three coronavirus vaccines in record time, that will be achievable. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's alleged mistreatment of women is moving up the legal chain. Thursday, the Albany Police Department got involved in a case focusing on the sixth accuser that Cuomo allegedly groped at the governor's mansion. As the list of lawmakers telling Cuomo to resign from office continues to grow, Mr. Cuomo said he won't, and he has done nothing wrong. It could become a crime to taunt a police officer in Kentucky under a bill that passed the state Senate. The bill passed the Kentucky Senate 2211 on Thursday and now awaits House input. Under the legislation, anyone who accosts, insults, taunts, or challenges a law enforcement officer could face up to 90 days in jail and fines. USA Radio News.
It's happened. Since Election Day, more than 5 million people have downloaded the free Newsmax TV app from their smartphone store. It takes seconds, and with the free app, you can watch Newsmax TV right away. Most cable news channels require a paid subscription, not Newsmax. You get real news whenever you want. At home, Newsmax TV is on all major cable systems, and it's free on OTT devices, your smart TVs like Samsung, LG, Vizio, and Roku, YouTube, Zumo, and Pluto. Now, the free smartphone app lets you watch Newsmax easily wherever you are. So check Newsmax.com online for breaking headlines. Then go to the Newsmax TV app to watch the latest news with Sebastian Gorka, Dick Morris, Greg Kelly, Diamond and Silk, Michelle Malkin, Mike Huckabee, Alan Dershowitz, and so much more. Newsmax is already the fourth highest rated cable news channel in America. Everyone is watching Newsmax because it's real news for real people.
The United States House of Representatives are moving ahead with legislation aimed at your right to bear arms. Wendy King from the Pacific Northwest USA Radio News Bureau reports.
The House has passed a pair of measures aimed at tightening background checks for the sale and transfer of firearms. Lawmakers voted to approve the Bipartisan Background Checks Act, which would require background checks on all commercial gun sales, while also voting to pass a measure aimed at extending the review period required to purchase a firearm.
The National Rifle Association denounced the House action on Thursday and argued Congress instead should be approving gun rights measures. President Biden on Thursday signed his $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package into law. The feds have now spent $5 trillion in the last year fighting the virus that originated in Wuhan, China. The bill signing was originally planned for Friday afternoon, but was moved up a day after the bill arrived at the White House following the House vote on Wednesday. Thanks for listening, and TGIF, we are USA Radio News.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, back to the Alive. I am Sam Bushman. This is Indies Liberty Roundtable Live. I'm just talking to Scott Bradley, riding shotgun on the show today. FreedomBuzzingSun.com is website. And I mentioned that we've got these checks and balances, ladies and gentlemen. And not only do governments have an obligation via the Declaration of Independence to defend the principles of honest, proper government of defending rights of the people, understand that rights come from God. The Declaration of Independence makes this well known as well. Not from government. And if government protects those rights, it is the proper role of government. If government, though, becomes unprotective of those rights, then government becomes an evil that must be dealt with and stopped. Now, I agree that we can't jettison government for light and transient purposes, but at the same time, we have an obligation to understand that rights come from God to us. We, the people, are sovereign, and government derives its just power from our consent. And by that very reality, that means we do have the power. We consent to delegate for appropriate reasons, and we delegate to certain groups, the federal government or the general government, very limited in scope, authority. We delegate to the states, broader, but again, authority. But we really, as the people, maintain that authority. If they carry out our consent via the documents, the guidelines, the certificate of responsibility, if you will, then they're authorized. But if they violate that scope of delegation, we have to stop them, Doctor.
You know, let's spend just a moment or two on that consent to the governed. There are many today that believe that if you have an election and you put somebody in office, and you could name any one of many dozens today, that have taken office that are seeking to bring about a form of government that's illegal, null and void, that's unconstitutional in the United States, a socialist government that redistributes wealth, you know, and takes, seizes power and control over the means of production and distribution. Okay, so people say, well, we elected them, you know, and majority rules and all this kind of thing, and so suddenly now they're creating laws that are in abject violation of the foundation, both your state and your general government constitutions. And so the consent of the governed is not obtained in every election. The consent of the governed occurred when we ratified the Constitution, whether it's the United States Constitution or your state constitution. People said, we will be governed by these people under these conditions. So we select trusted representatives that are required in every instance to take an oath to uphold the limits and bounds established within, you know, if you're a state legislator, let's just say, you take an oath to uphold your state constitution as well as the United States Constitution. And so what happens is that we say, okay, we've got the rules of engagement. This is the sandbox they play in. They can only play in that sandbox. And we'll abide by the stuff that comes out of their legislative enactments within the limits and bounds of that sandbox. And so the consent of the governed was given back in 1788 when the ratification level was obtained for a critical mass to have the U.S. Constitution become our Constitution. And it does not change every time there's an election. That consent is not an allowance to be able to go run amok because of all of these incompetence, you know, these lesser of lessers that we're putting into high office that should be trusted representatives, that should be those that are wise and honest and honorable and good, and they take an oath, a sacred oath. And by the way, Noah Webster, one of the founding fathers, spoke of oaths, and even if you don't say, so help me God, at the end of the oath or the affirmation, as it's often referred to, the Noah Webster said that the vengeance of God is imprecated upon the individual that violates such an oath, even if they don't, you know, overtly say in the name of God. So these people are scoundrels that are abandoning this.
Let me add this component as well. Not only was the consent given a long time ago, the contract doesn't re-up or change every election cycle. There's no doubt about that. But furthermore, individuals and tiny groups do not have the authority to interpret it and or refer to it in ways that individualize it or circumvent it. Let me give you an example. A lot of these sovereign citizen movements, a lot of these people that think that they can just create their own grand juries and things like this outside of the scope of government. This consent is a general consent that was given a long time ago to the document, to the contract, to the delegations laid out by that consent. But it's not individualized to the point where you can just say, I don't believe that. I don't believe in the IRS. I don't believe in, and I agree that some of the things are wrong that they've done, but we can't just opt out on a whim, and we can't make it so individualistic that it denies the whole contract, is what I'm trying to get across. There is a general consent by the people, and individual whims can't circumvent that original delegation of authority. And by our consent, individuals and tiny groups cannot circumvent that for their own purposes either, or they run rogue against the general contract.
You know, a couple of two or three things we probably ought to reiterate with this. Number one, that the Constitution is written in plain English words. The meaning of those words can be known. They can only mean what they meant in 1787 when they were written. There can be no modification of the definitions over time by any means, whether it's changing it in a dictionary or by court decree or anything like that. So the meanings are known. They are there, okay? The second thing is, what you're talking about is a big concern, really. And you, and I remember one time here a couple of years ago, you and Kurt and I were talking, and And I played a little bit of a foolish scenario out, but it made the point, I think. And I said, basically, I'm sure that you and I, you know, Kurt and you and me, could agree that we are the finest individuals that could possibly run a government. You know? Of course, it's all
time. Yes, we are, sir.
And so anyway, I says, you know, we could agree among ourselves that we ought to be in charge. But does that give it authority to be done? And the answer is no. And they say, well, but wait, let's talk about some of your listeners. Some of your listeners are probably just absolutely, yeah, they, Bradley and Sam and Kurt, they could run this. They could do it. Let's all just decide that, you know, among your listeners. Again, tongue in cheek. But the fact of the matter is, because we self-appoint does not delegate or grant or allow a usurpation of any authority. And sometimes people that take this mentality get to the point that they take precipitous action sometimes, and they put, you know, the justice system at risk. They put the domestic violence situation at risk. And what we end up having is people that, you know, are saying, well, it's not the way I want it, so I'm going to go throw Molotov cocktails or run down the street or whatever. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where we have a process by which this is done. It's a tried and true process. Now, I've got to tell you that the theft of this election in 2020 has caused something that we've got to get our arms around. We've got to reestablish the integrity of the election. Because if people feel that they no longer have an avenue, a just avenue, by which they can correct things. And I've always said we have two things that the Founding Fathers didn't have, and it justified them going to arms. We have the Constitution, and we have the vote. And because so few people have embraced the constitutional principle, limited government, checks and balances, delegated power, all of that kind of stuff, so few people have understood this that we're in grave danger today. Although we have the organic document, it's almost never applied. And so we've got to return to that, and it takes we the people to do that. But in addition to that, we the people have got to get our arms around the integrity of our election. Of course, and we always come back in your show, I know that, to this idea we've got to be a virtuous people. We've got to get right with God. I mean, and unless and until we do that, all bets are off. And in fact, I say often, no nation that has been faithful to God has ever fallen. But we're
and
fast
by the way,
approaching that.
That's
I mean,
the reason. That's the reason, even as a broken record as it may seem to be, ladies and gentlemen, we will never come off of this focus. We will never come off of the focus that we need to be a good, honest, moral, righteous people, keeping the commandments of God if we want the blessings of liberty. And you know what? You can say it's a broken record. You can say I'm not as religious as you are, Sam. You can say whatever you choose, but we will stick with the solutions that absolutely, absolutely are proven successful. And there is no other way. You cannot violate author of liberty and his commandments and guidance and expect to have liberty. It is not possible, and therefore we will never step back from that obligation, and I would submit opportunity, to keep the commandments and receive the blessings. Okay, this is what God has told us. It isn't my edict. It isn't my say. It isn't my opinion. It's the reality that the author of liberty gives us. We can turn our back on it at our peril, but we can't deny truth as it really
Why
is.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody ever having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, time sure flies when you're talking about liberty. A sacred cause to which we're engaged, absolutely 1,000%. By the way, in the $15 minimum wage thing, there's a lot of Democrats that voted against it, just so you know. So we do have the ability to reject the swamp and reach across the aisle and make a difference and influence people for good. And there are Democrats who do believe in principles of liberty. We just need to help them understand and remember who they are and what they stand for. And we absolutely, Dr. Bradley, need to really hammer on this, that it's about keeping the commandments of God. If we want liberty, there is no other way, sir.
You know, let's talk about that for a moment. You know, some people you've said have said to you, well, Sam, I'm just not as religious as you are, but let me just tell you what Thomas Jefferson said. Now, he was the icon of liberty in so many ways, and he put forth the Virginia Religious Liberty Act that established that in Virginia before even the First Amendment was brought forth. But here's what he said. The interests of society require the observation of those moral precepts only which all religions agree, for all forbid us to murder, steal, plunder, or bear false witness, and that we should not intermeddle with the particular dogmas in which all religions differ and which are unconnected with morality, the practice of morality being necessary for the well-being of society. We all agree in the obligation of the moral precepts of Jesus, and nowhere will they be found delivered with greater purity than in his discourses. Now, at an earlier time, he said, the declaration that religious faith shall not be punished does not give impunity to criminal acts dictated by religious error. Now, let's talk about this for a second. Jefferson points out the fallacy of the statement today that you can't legislate morality. My position is if a law does not have a moral basis, it ought to be revisited. And he talks about
because
the moral precepts.
There is no such thing as politics, doctor. It's all moral discussions. And when you say you can't legislate morality, you can stand on morality. It's not only a fallacy, it's an outright lie, and they know it. So there are no things of political nature, of divide nature, of the many that can't agree idea. Okay, all these discussions are moral discussions, every single one of them.
Well, and here's the thing. The Founding Fathers clearly understood the responsibility to maintain morality, and we could talk whether it's Blackstone, one of the mentors of the Founders, if you will, or Washington's inaugural address or farewell address, and I mean, Jefferson, Madison, John Adams, Samuel Adams. I mean, you could go down the whole list. But again, going back to this Jefferson statement, the practice of morality be necessary for the well-being of society. But this other statement at the end needs to be just a moment spent on, I think. The declaration that religious faith shall be unpunished does not give impunity to criminal acts dictated by religious error. So let's just take honor killings. Your daughter comes home past her curfew. She's dishonored the family, so now we're going to kill her in the streets. Okay? This is religious error. This Sharia law kind of thing that some people would say, oh, so they ought to run the nation. No. The United States Constitution specifically says that the United States Constitution shall be upheld. Sharia law is not the law that this nation should go under. And so we could take that side trip if you wanted, but the fact of the matter is, religious error is not what Thomas Jefferson's talking about. And in that, he says, we agree that the obligation of and the moral precepts of Jesus, and nowhere will they be found delivered to greater purity than in his discourses. Jefferson turned back to the Savior to look at the moral basis of what society ought to be. And most people don't know that he read in the original languages every night before he went to bed the statements by Jesus Christ. I mean, and in his Bible he wrote, I am a Christian, in spite of what all of the detractors and religious detractors and revisionists say. Jefferson was a Christian. He may have held some beliefs and tenets differently than maybe what your belief is. In fact, it's interesting to me. He said, I am a sect by myself, as far as I know. I mean, he held these sacred principles, but they were based upon a morality. And so that's what the basis of this nation is. And unless and until we can return to that, I think we've still got a bumpy road ahead of us. And by golly, it looks like based upon the actions of the administration and the Congress and the courts and what our buffoons in our local communities are doing, we've got a long ways to go, guys, but we can do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, these are serious principles. These are serious ideologies to reckon with. And it's important that we bring them forth in our day. They were widely understood in the Founders' Day. They have been, for the most part, lost in modern day. We've fallen for this lie that everything is relative. We've fallen for this lie that, oh, the Constitution is just an ever-changing, living, breathing document. We've fallen for this lie that we can judge the past based on our own current, in my opinion, propagandized understanding. All these things are falsehoods that must be jettisoned yesterday. And the answers lie in the simple truths held in the Bible, the simple truth held by Christians and people who believe in Christ, the simple documented principles in the Ten Commandments. Okay, these are fundamental basics that we must return to if we want to right the ship and if we want to stay in the ship called the Constitution, called the political religion of our nation. We need to stand with these things, and we need to do it. There needs to be enough of us. We don't have to have a majority, but we have to have enough of us. Otherwise, we will lose the protection from Almighty God, the author of our liberty, and we will fall into, I don't even want to say what. I mean, who knows how bad it can get if we turn our back on our God. And so these things are not negotiable. Okay, we may not have unity, but we can have civility about it. But these things are not negotiable. If we're going to have unity, it must be around these fundamental moorings, these fundamental truths, these principles that make nations, peoples, families great, Doctor.
You know, you say you don't know how bad it'll get if we lose those things, but I think we can find some examples in the French Revolution with the debauchery that came out of there. They basically their religion became atheism. They overthrew marriage and the sanctity of family and everything. I mean, we could go on and on with that. We look at what the Sarlov anarchists did after the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, and what Marx talks about, overthrowing the most sacred and hallowed relationships. And you compare and contrast that with what the American founders said. I mean, John Adams said, only a religious and moral people can be governed by this Constitution. Thomas Jefferson and his, well, we've talked about enough about maybe about his, some of his things. Let's just go to George Washington. In his first inaugural address, he said the basis of his administration would be public and private virtue. These things were foundational. Oh, I'll give you another example. On December 25th, 1804, joint session of Congress called itself together, met. So we're talking Christmas Day, 1804. A guy by the name of John Hargrove was tasked with the responsibility of speaking to the joint session of House and Senate about an assigned topic. That assigned topic was the second coming of Christ and the judgment day. These people were focused in the founding era about preparing this nation for the return of the Savior. compare and contrast that to the buffoonery that happens in whether they're jointly met or not, the House and the Senate, and the talking of things like killing unborn children and it's okay, or taking away God-given rights, or limiting our ability to practice our religion individually or as institutions. These people were a different mindset. And today we have basically become French revolutionists, the Illuminists of the Illuminati, the Jean-Jacques Rousseaus and the Robespierres of our modern era. And that is who we are looking to govern this nation, tragically and sadly. Now, there are some very rare but very sparkling differences from that we can point to, but rarely does anybody have a full comprehension of the whole thing. Somebody may be for the Second Amendment, but they want to send the nation to war at the drop of a hat. Or some, they're fiscal conservatives, but they're social liberals, whatever.
Or they may be against the IRS, but they're advocating for a con. I mean, it's insanity, ladies
exactly.
and gentlemen.
Exactly.
The lack of understanding that we have.
So we don't have, well, I'll absolutely say that we don't have any perfect people there. None of us are. There's only been one perfect mortal walk the earth, and that's our Savior Jesus Christ. But we can emulate as much as we possibly can by focusing on his way. As our good friend Jefferson said, nowhere are these precepts delivered with greater purity than in the discourses of Jesus Christ. And we need to turn our hearts to that. That's where the founding fathers were. And Tocqueville wrote extensively about this in his writings after returning to France from visiting America in 1831. And he spoke about how religion was the principal issue in America. In America, he said, you know what? There's not a law against everything. You can do almost anything you want. But people don't because they have a moral compass within them. See, we as we become more vicious and debauched, as talked about by Ben Franklin, we need more masters. And that's why Utah's legislature just finished up. I'll just use that as an example. They created 503 new laws. You look at that, extrapolate that over 10 years, 20 years. Do we really need that many more masters? And I would submit that if the people were bounded, as in the beginning of this nation, by this moral compass, that they knew that they ultimately would face a divine judge that would be able to really adjudicate things properly, they didn't run off the rails and do all sorts of debauched and vile and lewd and corrupt and illegal kinds of things that violates individual rights and that the very basis of our government. We are stealing, for example, this $1.9 trillion debauchery that was just passed by the House and the Senate and signed by the President is stealing from our future, from our posterity. We have shackled our posterity with $1.9 trillion more dollars of debt. Now, I'm not saying just a portion of it. I'm saying it all, because we're long since spent beyond what our revenue stream is. So we've just stolen $1.9 trillion from our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and that's immoral. Theft is immoral. The Eighth Commandment applies whether government does it or whether you do it. I think I've run us out of time, Sam.
You've done a phenomenal job, as always, sir. We'll chat Monday. We appreciate you. FreedomsRisingSun.com. Ladies and gentlemen, it's about the peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. We're all about it and pray you'll join us. LovingLiberty.net, LibertyRoundtable.com, FreedomsRisingSun.com. For Sam and Dr. Scott Bradley, we declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.